What's up, everybody? Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Diamond Discussion Podcast. I'm Joe Stompo, and of course, along here with me is Mike Aliendo. Mike, I'm going to get right into it. I got some Yankee things to touch upon. First things first, looks like we're kicking the tires on Nolan Arenado again. It's getting frustrating. It kind of feels like a Pete Alonso situation, except we never actually had this player on our team before. And, you know, just to keep going back and forth with this, I don't know how much the Yankees have left to offer. I don't know what Cashman keeps telling the Cardinals. I don't know how much other players we could pull out of a hat. There's a couple of prospects that I have in mind. Everson Pereira would be one. Will Warren, Clayton Beter. I mean, I know Spencer Jones is probably untouchable for a guy who's 33 years old and has $52 million left. I don't know how you feel, Mike, but it's really frustrating to hear the words kicking the tires again on Arenado. It must be an 18-wheeler because this has been all offseason. He didn't want to come here at first. You know, then it shifted to the Red Sox. Now the Red Sox don't look like they're interested because it looks like they're in on Bregman. But the Yankees keep going down this road, and it seems to go nowhere. So I'm not sure where you sit on it. But for me as a Yankee fan, it's very frustrating because, you know, he could help the lineup out. I know he's 33 and kind of on a downside, but something's got to give here.
Yeah, I mean, look, as far as Arenado to the Yankees, I mean, I like the move if you don't give up a lot of pieces, the crazy pieces. I mean, like you mentioned, he's got $52 million left over the next three seasons, but he's getting the brunt of it next year with $21 million owed to him in 25. So, I mean, it could be money that's holding this up. Maybe St. Louis doesn't want to eat the amount of money maybe the Yankees are comfortable with. I mean, I think you and me spoke about it off air. I think we sort of sat around that $12 million range. You know, that brings the 21 down to 17. Then you got the following year 16 and 15. So you're looking at 12 and 11. That's just me spitballing saying that the Cardinals would give the Yankees maybe $4 million a season. I don't know how they would break it down. That's for them to decide. But, I mean, if you really think about it, though, yeah, Arenado's coming off a bad year, but he gives you such stellar defense. You know, so I think that just brings up what you guys lacked in the World Series and where you now have pivoted to, where you needed to address defense. And to me, you have. So to shore up third base, take the chance on Arenado, defensively, you know what you're going to get. So it's not a bad deal. Again, it depends on what you give up. If they throw Stroman in the deal, I mean, that would be great. That would be a win for the Yankees, at least. I know they want to get rid of him. But as far as the deal goes, like I said, I don't think it's all that crazy. You know, everyone's so worried about Arenado. I mean, you know, this guy was a monster his whole career. He's just
no. You know, I agree with you, but listen, it's giving off, you know, Josh Donaldson vibes a little bit. You know, he's creeping up in age. He wasn't as old as Donaldson. Donaldson was 37 when the Yankees got him, but I could see where the Yankees maybe say, "Oh, you're on the downside age wise." But if we could get him at a decent price, like you had just mentioned, where we work out some numbers, you know, I wouldn't mind it. I know he's a little pull happy. You know, he'd probably be a lot better if he could spray the ball to right field a little bit more. But I could work with that because, like you said, you know, on the defensive side, he's phenomenal. And that whole infield would be a really stellar infield when it came to defense. Volpe's already a Gold Glove winner. Jazz did great at third, and he's a natural second baseman. So he'd go back to second. You know, we got Goldschmidt. He's a Gold Glover. So I'd be very happy with that infield. I just want to make it work. It's just very annoying to go through this the whole offseason and the luxury tax, and they don't want to go over it, and they want to get rid of Stroman first because that's how it seems. They want to get rid of Stroman first before they make another move. Obviously, they had to offer Stroman, in my opinion, the first time, and the Cardinals said no. That's why the Yankees keep going back and forth. There's got to be prospects that maybe we're trying to offer up because I don't know how else you can make this deal happen without Stroman's contract being involved, because then we're going to be really over the threshold. They're already a couple of million dollars over the over the threshold now. So, and they don't want to end that year being over the threshold. So they're trying to get these moves now to shore that up. And it's frustrating.
Yeah, I could see where that could be a thing and where it probably drives you nuts because, you know, this has been, and listen, I think this is St. Louis. I don't really think this is really anybody else. And look, they're a very good run organization. They have been for a long time, you know. So I think they're just trying to find maybe the best deal for them. And I think it's probably coming down to money, if I had to guess. That's probably the issue. you know, if they're eating more money, they're going to get less in return. That's understandable. And I know the Yankees aren't really crazy about adding a ton of money onto the payroll, like you mentioned, with moving on from Stroman and everything else. I mean, look, if you got to start the year with Stroman, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world, especially if you shore up your defense. I think you put him in a better position to succeed because he needs a good defense. I think we've mentioned this before. But listen, it could be the Cardinals holding him up because, you know, there's been plenty of dialect with them and a few other teams. And it's just they seem a little reluctant. I think it's them with the money.
But am I wrong? Did the GM say they were like adamant of trading?
Yeah, and that's why.
At this point, you're basically dangling him. So how much leverage do you have when you come out and say we're willing to shop this guy and trade this guy?
Yeah, and the later this goes on, it looks more ridiculous because you put it out there that you're shopping him. You openly want to get rid of him. You're not a stranger to that. Now camp's starting, and you know players are starting to show up.
And this is like the fourth conversation we've had for this guy.
Still in uniform, like you know, the Cardinals, I would imagine, don't want him showing up to camp. Because it's the relationship's got to be a little strained now. You know, you put it out there openly, publicly, you're looking at
him. It's the same thing with Stroman and the Yankees.
Yeah, but, you know, and in the same regard, I mean, look, these guys are professionals. They got to show up where they're, who they're with. And that's, you know, that's until they're moved, it is what it is. They, you know, that's what they have to do. Do I think Arenado's maybe got a little bit of a bad taste in his mouth? I don't know. I don't really know their relationship. I don't know how good or bad it is. Maybe he also wants out as well because they're trending in a different direction. They seem to be more on the rebuild side. So having a 33-year-old Nolan Arenado who's making a substantial amount of money, you know, that could be an issue. But I think it's the Cardinals holding everything up here.
I agree. I definitely do think the Yankees have their own quirks about, you know, transactions too. Everything is money. And, you know, like I said, the tax threshold. So that all comes into play. Unfortunately, they operate that way now. With George, that probably wouldn't have been that much of a big deal. He probably would have pulled the trigger on things he wanted to get done without having to think about it. Cashman now thinks about it. And he brings everything to Hal, and they analyze everything, and everything at the end comes with a dollar sign. But for me, I know that Stroman contract is a bad contract. $18 million. They probably should never gave him a second year. But I understand they tried to use it as a leverage contract so they could trade him and potentially be in this situation because Cashman had said he wasn't a playoff pitcher. So you signed the guy that you knew you weren't going to pitch in the postseason, and he wound up not even pitched in the postseason last year. So now you're trying to publicly trade him, and it's becoming kind of tough.
But that's crazy to me because Stroman was not a playoff pitcher because you didn't give him a defense. So to sit here and say and openly trash your player like that to an extent, I mean, if I'm Stroman, I definitely got a bad taste in my mouth. It's not, you know, I think Stroman succeeds in a better situation with a better defense, and now you're doing that and kind of pushing this guy to the side. Listen, I don't care what people feel about Stroman personally and some of his antics off the field and some of the things he's done as he left certain teams. You know, that's a little funny, but that's neither here nor there. Him is a pitcher. He's a very solid guy. And again, you give him a defense and he's going to be fine.
He did struggle though in the second half.
He did. Don't get me wrong, but that could be due to maybe some of the defense where that's he doesn't true. Feel confident that he's got the defense behind them to do their job, that he's maybe over-pitching and over-throwing. You know, I make this comparison because I think it's the perfect fit was when Kikuchi went to the Angels. I mean, the Astros. He went to the Angels in the offseason. I'm talking about the deadline last year. But Kikuchi strived with Houston because they had the defense to back him up. Stroman needs that as well, and now you're essentially doing that. You're looking at Arenado, Jazz at second. Volpe's a solid defender at short, and listen, I don't care how old Goldschmidt is. He's still a solid first baseman defensively, so you're giving the guys the tools to success, but now I guess maybe you strain that relationship so much that, you know, you can't have him back to an extent. I think that was sort of a mistake.
But also, pitching him now, if you don't trade him before the offseason ends, you know, if he has a bad first half, he's going to be untradeable and you're going to be stuck with him because no team is going to be interested now. It could hurt his value, him pitching. But like you said, they showed up the defense to the point where a ground ball pitcher like himself may benefit from this. But if he has a tough first half, it's going to be tough to trade him by July. And then you eat that $18 million, and there's nothing you can do about it. So
one thing I say I like about Stroman is when he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, he seems to rise to that occasion. And I think that now has happened with him. So Do I think if he stayed with the Yankees, I kind of think that relationship is a little strained, and you're kind of at the point where you do have to move him. A lot of things were said, like you mentioned, he's not a playoff pitcher. I think that's a little baffling to me, like I said, because he needed the defense, and that's the type of pitcher that he is.
I don't think I would have trusted him anyway, honestly, Mike.
It's hard to tell. You know, like I said, we don't know really how much in his head, his own head, he was. Like you said, you know, maybe he felt some type of way about the defense and he was trying to do too much, you know, and that maybe, you know, just like when a guy's pressing at the plate.
He was definitely pressing, 100%. He was not himself the second half. The first 2 months, he was a great pitcher. He was one of our best pitchers. I can't even doubt that, and I won't take that from him. But the second half, he was a totally different guy. And you could tell in his demeanor on the mound, he just looked like after the first two innings, that sometimes he was out of it. He just out of gas, and he looked fatigued. He looked sometimes uninterested because he knew he was struggling. So, I don't know. It was a bad second half for him. But hopefully he could rebound. And like you said, with the defense, maybe it'll benefit him to the point where if we need to make a deal, he'll be pitching good enough to where we could trade him.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I don't know, but knowing Stroman and some of his stuff in the past and, you know, things that we've seen, comments he's made, does he even show up to spring training?
Oh, no, he did.
He did show up. Okay.
So,
right, so he's there. Listen, he's being professional. He's doing his thing.
And that's all I could ask. Thank God. I don't need any more problems.
But he's also got to somewhat showcase himself now because, you know, he wants to go to a good situation.
Oh, 100%.
You know? And if he does, if he ends up in one of those scenarios, like I said, with a solid defense behind him, I think he's going to have a bounce back year and he's going to be pretty solid.
But I do think he's going to come out of the pen. I do think Clark Schmidt has the fifth spot. I don't think Boone's going to give him that fifth spot. And I don't think it's going to be up for grabs either. I think it's Schmidt and that's it.
Well, yeah, for the fact that they're looking to move on from him. So I would say, yeah, you can.
So he's a bullpen guy to me for now. Long reliever, maybe he comes in fifth inning.
Which I don't think he's going to laboring. He's got some left in the tank on the mound to start a game. So
I know you're 100% right, but like he's going to spot start. Like, this is my opinion. I think he's going to spot start. If there's an injury, like let's say, God forbid, Cole or Fried or someone in the starting rotation goes down, he'll be there.
Yeah,
that's how I think. I think he's going to come out of the pen, and he'll be a long reliever. Or if it's like a blowout game. Or if we're getting blown out, you may see Stroman come in and pitch some meaningless innings to maybe keep his ERA down.
Just keep him some appearances. You know, keep him in the mix. Keep him going. You know what I mean? If you're looking to trade him and he's still on your team by opening day, which I don't think either one of us anticipate. But if he's still there, you know, obviously barring injury, you potentially keep him at that point. But if he's still there opening day, you know, you're going to have to get him in the mix somewhere because what are you going to do? He's just not going to pitch and then, you know, I don't know. Listen, time is going to tell on Stroman and this Arenado stuff. You know, I think we've had a lot of off-season drama with some of these guys and teams not moving and who's moving this. I mean, you know, look, finally, how many times have I been ripping Pete Alonso and Scott Boris, and you know, since our last big show, I mean, Alonso is back. Polar Bear is back.
Fans.
Listen, he signs a 2-year deal. He's got an opt out after the first year, 2 for $54. He's getting $30 million up front in year one with a $10 million signing bonus, and that's why it goes up to 30. And if he decides to not opt out, then you're looking at him for the following season at $24 million. Look, I wanted this to get done because this, to me, solidified the Mets lineup where they went from a good lineup to a potential great lineup. It gives them a lot of depth. It opens up the door to have some of these young kids still with the team, maybe not starting and putting pressure on Beatty and Mauricio and Acuna to maybe make up some of the ground that you're losing without Alonso. You know, so to me, this was the move, and I said it over and over again, that it made the most sense, and this opens the door for everybody. I think this is a good deal on both sides where, you know, listen, if Alonso goes off, he's opting out. But if he goes off, that benefits you because the rest of your team maybe is playing well around them and your lineup is working on all cylinders.
Right. I mean, listen, it's a great deal for both sides, right? You know, you're a Met fan. You wanted to see him come back. You finally got him back. And for Pete, I really do think he wanted to come back. I don't think he was going to take any other offer. I do think maybe there was some offers. Maybe Toronto did offer him something, and he was just using that to dangle it over the Mets' head. But, you know, Steve got it done. Scott got it done, whatever the case may be, even though Boris kind of let this drag out a little extra for whatever reason. He's got his methods, right? But let me tell you, Met fans that were saying, oh, if we lose Pete, we have Juan Soto to make up for it. I always said, no, that's not why you got Soto. You got Soto to get Soto because he's a generational talent. You needed a right fielder, and who wouldn't want this guy, right?
Right, of course.
But you didn't want to lose Alonso after getting Soto.
Yeah, that's it almost hurt your offseason.
Right, and you add more protection now for Vientos as well. You know, he's going to see a lot more fastballs now that Alonso is back in the lineup, and I think he's going to mash even more now because Alonso is back in the lineup. Also, I think it's better for him to be at third. I know they were saying he's not as great as a third baseman, and he could probably be considered a first baseman even in the future, but I think keeping him at third right now is perfectly fine. I don't think he's going to be a defensive liability at all, even though they say, oh, you know, Pete's not good defensively, which obviously he's not known for his defense, but Pete needs to be at first and Vientos at third. And I think that runs, you know, rounds out your infield.
Well, I think there's going to be a slew of things happening with third base, DH, second base. There was a lot of stuff coming out over the last, you know, day or two as guys are starting to report to spring training. We're now getting interviews with players and managers and, so I see they said mentioned something about McNeil bouncing around a little bit. Primarily, he's going to be the second baseman, obviously given injuries and everything into account. I know they're going to try Acuna at third. I think Mauricio's going to get a shot. They're saying they're going to push maybe Beatty to second as well, because he played a little second in the minors last year. So, you know, to have these guys play multiple positions, I think is great. I think having Alonso back obviously opens that door where you're not necessarily forced with Vientos at first or this one or that one. You kind of can move a lot of guys around. There's a lot of moving parts, which could be good and bad, but you like versatility. But as far as Alonso back with the lineup and back with the team, it made the most sense. It was just, we all saw it. We all knew, you know, it was like Sasaki going to the Dodgers. Like, right. We all knew it was coming, and this was almost the same thing here, and it would have been just so ugly if Alonso would have left maybe on these terms. You know, I'm glad he's back. He's got somewhat of a prove-it deal, so to speak, with a little protection in case that, you know, goes south. I think he's going to bounce back, especially with Soto in the lineup now and the rest of these guys that, I think if it's done right and these guys do what they're supposed to, I think Pete is going to have a fantastic season. And like you said with Vientos, I'm going to die on this hill, I guess. I want Vientos in the two-hole in between Lindor and Soto because I think that's the best opportunity for him to succeed. Not saying that he can't do it because I was watching the Mets yearbook earlier. And it was the highlights of last year. It was the opening of it. And he had such big moments for them in such key spots. And little things you don't even think about. Like, yeah, he had a couple of walk-offs and some big home runs. But he had some big at-bats in the playoffs. And, you know, I love his bat, and I don't want to see it struggle. So
I got to say, I disagree with you a little bit. I think Soto needs to be number two. He just his on-base percentage is through the roof. And
it is.
If you could have Lindor getting on and then Soto, it's almost like there's a 90% chance he's getting on base. That's how it feels. And to have him and Lindor get on base, and then you see Vientos third, and then you got Alonso fourth, I don't know. I personally, as a Yankee fan, seeing Soto all year, you know, he was
in front of Judge for that reason. Soto is one of those old-school type number two hitters where he's on base, he's hitting the ball, he's doing that old-school way of being a number two. It doesn't strike out, you know, sees a lot of pitches, sees a good at bat. But again, I'm going to go back to the protection for Vientos because we have obviously the possibility. Sometimes these guys go in these sophomore slumps. You know, the league now is more aware of them. They have more tape. They have more film. They've seen what they do. And, you know, there are adjustments that are going to be made. And listen, Vientos is going to have to do that as well. He's going to have to make his adjustments to counteract. But I just think you give him the best opportunity at success and maybe limit the chance of a sophomore slump if he's in between Lindor and Soto. I think it just it's funny because I'm probably on the minority with this one. And this was kind of my own little – I have not seen a mock lineup anywhere like that.
The unwritten rule is if you're the number two hitter, you're considered the best hitter on your team.
Yeah, so to speak, yeah.
So are you saying Vientos is a potentially better hitter than Soto?
No, absolutely not. I just want to give him the most protection, and I want the lineup to flourish the way it may be supposed to. Now, I know that almost contradicts my point of taking your best hitter out of the two-hole. And listen, Soto is an ideal two-hitter with three and four-hitter in him. So he's kind of all three at once, so to speak.
That's true.
But That's where I say, like, I just want Vientos to have the protection because I don't want this guy to fail. You know, I want him to be what we saw last year, and I want him to have more of those moments. And until he's maybe a little more proven, then I say, yeah, we'll go back or move it to the way it is or leave it. If it works, then leave it alone. But that's just my theory with this lineup, and that's maybe how I would see things or how I do and how I would do it if I was in that position. But, you know,
I mean, for me, looking at it, if Lindor gets on base and Soto gets on base back-to-back and you got no outs and you got to face Vientos, that pitcher's not going to pitch around Vientos to face Alonso. Yeah, you got to try to get Vientos out. So you may see some hittable pitches if you get those two guys on base. And they get on base. Soto can.
Even with Vientos in the three slot and Alonso backing him up, he's still going to get protection. But, you know, it's just not, to me, it's also not as much as you're going to get if Soto's behind you. You know, if you have that issue and that bad bat coming up in the lineup at number three, protecting this kid. I can go either way on it, but I'm still in my thing. It's maybe a little experiment for me. I don't know, but I like the idea of Vientos. It's a little outside the box. But again, I think it brings him the most protection and gives him the best chance of succeeding.
Yeah. And I think like we said earlier, getting Alonso back is just more of a benefit for a guy like Vientos and the rest of that lineup. You know, it's going to round out the lineup a little bit more better. And also, the power, you add more power now instead of losing 35, 40 home runs.
So, yeah, and you know what? You got a couple of guys that, maybe not so much, but Francisco Alvarez is one for me that he's coming off a down season. I think this kid's going to bounce back. You know, listen, they got a lot of pop in that lineup. They really do. You know, in Mets history, they've never had three guys in the lineup hit over 30 home runs in a season together. That might change. The closest they got was in 06. But, you know, that obviously can change now. They got a lot of star power, a lot of bat, a lot of pop. So, you know, we might see in a lot of home runs. But that's where, when I've made this argument in the past in our outfield show, when we brought up Brandon Nimmo, this is why I don't want Brandon Nimmo to be looking for the home run.
Right.
I want
him to do that. Could do that already.
Yeah, I want that pesky Brandon Nimmo that's going to give you, you know, a 10-pitch, 12-pitch at-bat, or just fighting off pitches. And, you know, with the good eye that he has, I don't want him hitting home runs like that.
And you know what? I don't think it's going to be like that. I think he's going to revert back only because of the way how this lineup is now set up with Soto in it and Alonso back in it. That's just how I feel as an outsider looking in. You know, I do think you're not going to see Nimmo try to hit for power as much. Obviously, he's going to want to implement that in his game, but I think he's going to change and he's going to try to work on getting on base more.
I mean, you got to think, if Nimmo is in your five hole, he's basically your leadoff hitter again for the second half of the lineup, or however you want to put it, if you want to go 1-4, 1-4. You know, so to have him be at the top at number five, you know, maybe he's going to be leading off a lot of innings in that spot. You know, you want him to break down a pitcher a little bit, you know, like you just had it with, if we go with, you know, Lindor and Soto back-to-back at 1-2, you just had these two guys who, listen, Lindor, most of the time, I don't think he's a guy that strikes out on three pitches a lot. He's going to waste a few. He's going to do what he does. We know what Soto does and how he could wear down a pitcher. And then you have to, these high-leverage guys with Vientos and Alonso back-to-back, if that's the lineup we go with, that have all this pop, and now you get through that, and now you got another pesky guy that's just going to give you another. So he's a tough out, and he walks a lot, and he sees, you know, he takes a lot of good pitches. He's got a very good eye in Nimmo. You know, so I'm not really crazy. The home runs are there. We got home runs everywhere. So as long as these guys stay healthy, obviously.
Right.
You know, but I don't need Nimmo to do that no more. Listen, you give me 15 to 20, I'm okay with that. Bring that average up. Bring that on. His on base is always up there. You know, just be that pesky guy at five. I think it's just perfect. And then the rest of the lineup, you know, it'll do what it does.
Right. And like I said, I don't think the Mets are going to have any problem scoring runs. That, to me, is, even without Alonso, I think they had a pretty good lineup. But adding him really rounds out the lineup. It's going to bring, like I said, added power. I do think he's going to hit a little bit better average-wise because of all these guys that are in front of him. There are going to be a lot of guys on base, you know, for the most part. So I think Alonso's going to be, since obviously he's going to be the four-hitter, he's going to see a lot of guys in front of him on base, and he's going to have a lot of chances to knock in a lot of runs. So going to see a lot of pitches that he could hit, that he could handle, and Obviously, he's used to the division, so he's used to the pitching there and in the National League as a whole. So this is nothing new for him. So he could fit in very nicely with this lineup.
Yeah, I think Alonso's going to benefit big time being back with the Mets. Soto, you know, I think this is just, this contract is a win on both sides. And, you know, this maybe Cohen putting Mr. Boris in check with these, you know, yeah, we're going to, Alonso has an opt out. And if he chooses to opt out, the Mets, you got to pay him some more money to leave. Right. Like, what was that? You know, that was, like, enough.
That's Boris being Boris, man. That's yeah, just, you know, how he so operates. You know how he operates. This was a win.
Yeah, no. And listen, I think everybody listening at this point, you could probably feel it when I say his name that I'm just not a fan of how he operates.
Well, speaking of Boris, you know, we got another guy of his that's still teamless, and that's Alex Bregman.
He's another one. It's just annoying now.
It's crazy. It went from the Red Sox, Cubs, and the Tigers as the three teams, right, that are...
And the funny part is the team you didn't mention is probably the one that offered him the best deal in Houston. I think it was 6 for 156.
6 for 156. That is still on the table. He can actually take that offer if he wanted to.
You could take that right now. Now you have an argument of maybe Houston has the best lineup in the American League if you add Bregman to that. I mean, yeah, I understand they lost Kyle Tucker, but they seem to have pivoted pretty nicely. You know, so, I mean, this is just annoying at this point. Like, just get this done, you know. And then we got this mystery team that supposedly has a 6-year deal out there. Would they have the choice of an opt out after year one? Toronto, we know it's you. Stop hiding behind the bushes. Yeah, just stop hiding.
I was literally about to say
this isn't Bobby Valentine disguising himself in the dugout. You know,
right?
Come on, we know who you are.
Supposedly they offered a 6-year deal, and after the first year, it would be a team option. Why would he do that to himself?
Right? Why?
And you see who his agent is? You think his agent's going to say yes to that? Come on. What are we doing?
No, we just saw his agent do the exact opposite with Alonso with the Mets. I mean, what are we doing here?
After Toronto has put together a decent offseason, signing Santander, they got Scherzer, they got Hoffman, they shored up their defense with Jimenez. That's the offer you offer to this guy? I mean,
I don't know. It seems like teams don't seem to be reluctant as maybe others were, like the Mets, for example, with Alonso with the years and everything. But, you know, Bregman, the years are there, you know. And he's come out and said he doesn't want a short-term deal. He'll take maybe a little less money to get that long-term. He wants that stability, which I can respect that.
But you have it there.
Unless he doesn't want to go back to Houston. I don't know what's going on. Maybe he just feels the money isn't there.
Well, they offered him $26 million a year. 6 for $156. That's $26 million a year annually. If you're going to take less, what's less than 20, 21?
For what, an extra year? The seventh year? I think that's what's the holdup. He wants the seventh, that it doesn't seem like it's happening. I mean,
over a year. That's ridiculous to me. And again, that's got to be a Boris thing.
It could be, but it could be the player too. You know, it could be the player. Because listen, the player at the end of the day should be the one that dictates if he's going to sign or not.
But no one's going to want a 37-year-old third baseman on a 7-year deal. It's just not going to happen. I don't know how he doesn't see that.
I mean, you know, he's looking to sneak out that seventh year, and he's going to do it by any means necessary, I guess. But I think at this point, he's kind of hurting himself. He is. You know,
all these guys that turn 30 and they think they're going to get a 6 to 7 year deal, it's not going to happen unless a team is literally that desperate that they need to make a deal. But the last 2 or 3 years, you have seen teams that have showed they are not desperate. They're not gonna make moves just to do them.
And you know
if I say, yeah, I think I'm worth 7 years. Okay, great, that's great. We don't. Other teams in the past, they would have done that and crumbled and gave a deal just to make a deal.
You know, it's funny. I thought a few years ago these big contracts, these 10, 11, 12-year deals were almost done. As far as the Soto and what we're going to probably see with Vlad Jr., I think that's just different because of their age. But these guys at the 30, 31-year-old threshold there, I thought those days were maybe behind us, and then San Diego threw a ton of money at Xander Bogaerts. And, you know, that's not really looking so great at this point. But I mean, listen, Bregman could almost shoot himself in the foot because I think at any moment, Houston seems to be very agitated with this.
He already has. He shot himself in the foot, in my opinion.
I agree, but in the same regard, at any point, from what I understand, Houston's offer is still available if he wanted it, at least from what I gather. But what if Houston decides, you know what, we're tired of this, we're pulling our offer, it's not on the table anymore, you know, have fun, or maybe we'll catch you on a short-term deal if nothing materializes for you. I mean, what's going on? I still think, you know, Bregman still makes a lot of sense for me in Boston. I think he's
going to...
I think he's going to translate very well in Boston. He hits well there. We've mentioned it before. He shores up their defense at third, which Devers ain't all that bad at third, but they're looking to move him off at third base.
Yeah. Now, he can play second, too. He's actually said he'll play second base if they wanted to keep Devers at third.
If they wanted to, yeah, you know, they could. You know, I like the fit in Boston. Detroit, I know that's been thrown out there.
The AJ Hinch reunion.
Yeah, look, I think it's he's a solid fit for the lineup, so to speak, but he's not – that's not eye-popping to me. It's not go, wow, he went to Detroit. Like, if he went to Boston, that would be a eye-popping, at least for me. I think he's going to succeed big time there. And I'm not saying he's going to be terrible if he goes to Detroit, but I just think he'd be better if he went to Boston.
Well, I agree with you 100%, but I do think the Tigers, if they got him, they'd be front runners in the AL Central.
Well, I know
Kansas City is up there too. I know Cleveland, obviously. They always put a good ball club together. But if Detroit got him, they have a good starting pitching. They had a Gleyber at second, and you have Bregman at third. It's not a bad infield.
No, listen, don't forget about Minnesota over there, too. I mean, look, they got a top five bullpen in baseball. You know, a lot of guys that were hurt last year and missed some time. You know, if these guys bounce back and they stay healthy, I mean, they got that guy Jaron Duran or whatever. He throws like 104 miles an hour as their closer. It can be a little wild at times, but they got a really solid bullpen. They got the stud Pablo Lopez that nobody really talks about because he's in Minnesota, you know. So don't forget about them either. They're going to be healthy. I think they're going to be a pesky team, but they've had health issues. You know, we mentioned it in our short. Byron Buxton is one of them. I mean, if they could just stay healthy, I think they're going to be a solid team to look out for. You know, that could be a whole massacre out in the AL Central. I think that could go either way if these teams are playing well.
Yeah, so basically, like we had just, you know, wrapped up, Alonso back to the Mets. Huge for them.
It.
Yep. And yeah, it's going to be interesting. In other news, Kenley Jansen, another big free agent. He just signed 1 year, $10 million with the Angels.
All right, let me know when he gets traded, then I'll be interested that he signed and went somewhere.
I'm just surprised he didn't sign with the Dodgers. So that's good.
I don't think they have room. I mean, they just officially brought back Kershaw, but maybe he's staying a little close. Like, hey, you know, guys, somebody goes down, I'm right next door. Hey, how you doing? You miss me? I want to come back. I think Jansen has mentioned too that he would want to go back to the Dodgers at some point. I'm pretty sure he's mentioned that over the last year or so. I think there was some controversy with that last offseason. He mentioned that, like, you're in a Boston uniform.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Still daydreaming about being in LA. So maybe that's why he did that. If the Angels have somewhat of a decent season, you know, look, he's going to probably close games for them, obviously. And,
yeah, I could see him at the back end of that bullpen.
Yeah, of course. You know, so. And if they're not, then they got a nice trade chip at the deadline. And, you know, he might end up with a contender, probably the Dodgers, if somebody gets hurt. So, you know, we'll look forward to that, I guess. And speaking of the Dodgers, they did the inevitable, which I thought was, you know, again, Clayton Kershaw is officially back with the Dodgers. I think he was at spring camp before he even signed his deal.
He was pending a physical, but he was still there.
Yeah,
so.
Now, Kershaw is now the, I guess, seventh guy in this rotation. Look, you're not getting him back till at least June. He's coming off a foot and knee injury. You know, he had surgery in both. You know, thank God it's on arm issues. But I think this might be it. I think this might be the last little run we see for Kershaw.
I agree. Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, he's put together a monster career. I've always been a fan of his. And it was crazy. I read the article, you know, him re-signing with the Dodgers. His 18th season.
It's unbelievable what he's been able to do. One team, that's been great.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's a fantastic thing. And I've always been a fan of Kershaw. I know, listen, most of us baseball fans aren't really crazy about the Dodgers right now because we probably all want to be them. But, you know, look, Kershaw, I mean, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I would love to see one more healthy season out of him. I was such a fan of him when he first came up. And, you know, he's so good, and he has that funky delivery, and, you know, he's just so much fun, you know. He's so much
fun
to watch.
And I think he's back
so good.
Mid-May, they
June,
said?
They were saying.
Oh,
June?
Yeah, okay. So that's, yeah, that's pretty good for them.
Look.
They're 12 starters. That's great.
Yeah, 12 starters. I mean.
It's like, it's look, unbelievable what they've been able to do. I don't know. It's crazy.
Listen, they're going for it. You can't be mad at it.
I'm not.
Like, you know, we've mentioned them 100 times.
It's actually funny now. It's more funny than anything.
Yeah, and at this point, I mean, look, you know, Kershaw is obviously deferring his season debut till June. Right. Joke, because everything with the Dodgers is deferred, so why not the start of his season?
But just the other notable signings, the Padres got Jason Hayward on a one-year deal. To go back to the Dodgers, Kike Hernandez, he re-signed on a one-year
Hayward
deal.
Went to San Diego.
Who did I say he went to?
The Dodgers went back to the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah,
yeah,
the Padres. Went to San Diego. Excuse me. Kike went back to the Dodgers.
Kike, and, yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe I misheard you.
It's all right. And, yeah, Jansen, we had said, and this is like, you know, getting down to the nitty-gritty. We got a week left before, I don't know, before, when do pitchers and catchers already reported? I think the 15th is when the players report. So we only have a couple of days left. The Twins got Ty France on a one-year deal. That's not a bad move.
And Harrison Bader.
Yeah, and Harrison Bader, they showed up their outfield. So that was another good move. Like I said, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. Quickly, how do you feel about Dylan Cease? You think he's going to get dealt, or is that going to be a trade deadline move?
I'll be honest. I can go either way with that. I think they're waiting for a blow me away package that might not happen. I think the same thing with King. Cease.
Because I think they're going to trade him at some point.
Yeah, he's definitely going to
stick with
go.
King. King, they signed, you know, they re-signed arbitration, but
I just wanted to pick your brain there. Everything I know the Mets were interested. Yeah, the Mets are definitely interested. I still maybe see a fit with Baltimore because, you know, if we want to jump into something, Baltimore has been the team of the offseason that has definitely upset me the most because just, what are you doing? You're in a position where you have such a young team, a ton of young talent. You know, maybe you could have went after Corbin Burns and re-signed him. You went and traded for this guy. And they really, outside of Tyler O'Neill and Gary Sanchez and them moving the walls in, I mean, what did they really do? You got bounced in the first round last year. I think it was 2 years in a row that happened to them. To me, this offseason for them has been the most disappointing for me. I'm sort of like a backdoor Baltimore fan. Like, I kind of just root for them. Maybe I like their colors. It's orange for me, I guess, maybe. I was a Cal Ripken guy growing up, too. I love watching Cal play.
Which is respectable.
Yeah,
that's
but,
fine.
You know, so I've always had like a, they don't play in my division. And just a team that I was like watching. Baltimore was up there for me.
They got older. They signed Charlie Morton.
Yeah.
They lost Santander.
They've lost too much, and they haven't gotten back enough, in my opinion. Listen, I actually think the Tyler O'Neill deal is actually going to be like a sneaky good one. I think he's going to be fine.
He's a decent ball player.
Yeah, look,
they
have a decently deep lineup in Baltimore, so I think they're okay, but they had to shore up their starting rotation. And they lost a big piece.
Yeah,
I thought they should have been more in on Burns. You know, then the Charlie Morton deal doesn't look bad if you bring back Burns, you get more.
He's 41.
I understand, but he's still bringing it. It's not terrible.
But he's not Burns.
No, of course not.
Drop off.
So, I mean, does Baltimore go out on another limb and trade for one of these starters that they potentially lose again in the offseason next year? I mean, this is what's kind of frustrating to me, where they had the most to gain and also the most to lose, in a sense. They lost Burns, they lost Santander. And they're in a position where they're competing for the East. They're right there. You know, they're projected, I think, to win 90 games. I mean,
well, they make it easier for the Yankees because, like I said, the Blue Jays did more than the Orioles did this offseason.
Yeah,
when it comes to adding rather than subtracting.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed with them because they had an opportunity where they could really have, like, you know, like the Yankees are potentially the odds-on favorite to come out of the American League again. I mean, and somewhat rightfully so. I mean, you know, they've done the most, I guess, to some sense. But, you know,
it's just
a walk in the park for them at this point. Sort of. Listen, you still got to play the game. Guys have to jump stuff to do all that. But Baltimore had the opportunity to really challenge the Yankees. And right now, I sort of don't see it. You know, they could have maybe did a little more in the bullpen. You know, they have pitching issues. And I just don't understand how. What are we going to do? You can't waste this lineup. You can't waste this young talent.
I know they signed the 35-year-old Japanese pitcher. I forgot. His name is slipping my mind at the moment. I know he was 35 and he had like a great ERA in his last season in Japan. But again, he's 35 and they signed him to a one-year deal. I know that much. So, like, again, they did a lot of subtracting rather than adding.
Listen, you know what would be funny? And I'm gonna jump on you for this one, because you got a team in mind that I know you're upset with, and I think Baltimore and maybe this team, this little mystery team that you're about to announce, Seattle. They can make a nice little deal here.
Seattle.
Baltimore needs pitching, Seattle needs a bat. So the two disappointments in our opinion, you got Seattle, I got Baltimore. Why not make a trade? Get Castillo on that, in that rotation.
That's one way to look at it. That's a great idea, honestly, because they are overloaded with pitching. They have a ton of starting pitching that they could get rid of. But I know some of those guys they'd rather keep. I know Castillo was the big name that they're looking to move. I know, again, the Mets were sort of in that, I think, conversation when Castillo's name was getting floated around, which would not be a nice addition for the Mets, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah.
The fact that Seattle didn't do anything in the offseason is just wild to me, because here's the thing. The Astros only got Christian Walker and Isak Paredes. Okay, two big names, but not enough for me to win the division, because Houston, to me, their bullpen and their starting pitching isn't something to get to, hot on.
They got a nice young rotation. Don't sleep on that.
They're very injury prone, and they didn't pitch well down the stretch last year. And they pitched good in the playoffs. They gave up like three runs, and they still lost by one run each game. And wound up getting swept by Kansas City.
That was the shock to the offense.
They didn't do a lot to me to move the needle to win the division. I still think Texas is going to take this division, but Seattle could have really stepped up and got and really spent money. They could have got Bregman, and they didn't even offer Alonso anything. They were never in on Alonso. They were never in on Bregman. They were never in on a guy like Ha-Sung Kim. They were never in a guy like Brandon Lau. I know his name's been floated around. It's just crazy to me how they didn't do anything to move the needle in the West. And it's just crazy, because the last two seasons, they've been there the last week of the season trying to get into the playoffs. So that one big thing that was missing was a power bat, a right-handed bat, if that. If they want to add a lefty bat, great. They didn't even look to add any offensive firepower to their lineup, and they're going to have the same problem again. They're going to pitch, and they're not going to score any runs. And again, you're going to see a team like Houston sneak up and probably surpass them again, and it's going to be a two-team race between the Rangers and the Astros, and the Mariners are just going to be kicking themselves because they didn't do anything, and rightfully so. If they don't want to do anything, good. You deserve to be on the outside looking in. They haven't spent a dollar. It's unbelievable to me.
Yeah, I don't understand, because, you know, you have such potential with their rotation. I mean, you know, top to bottom. You know, you have Luis Castillo in your rotation, and you're just saying, yeah, we don't need him, because they're so young and they're so deep in their rotation. Their bullpen isn't the worst. It could maybe a little work. You know, I think they got Munoz closing out games over there. And listen, he's a fireballer. He throws hard. He's a solid reliever, solid closer. Arguably, he could be maybe in the top 10, top 15. He's up there.
They could have used another reliever. Yeah, like you definitely. Just said, and a Kirby Yates, a Tanner Scott. They weren't even in the ballpark for any of these guys.
Something. Spend money. Make your team better. Put them in the playoffs. I mean, you got a young stud in Julio Rodriguez. What are you going to do? You're going to waste him too? I mean, what are we doing here? I don't understand that. And, you know, I know Seattle really gets your blood boiling, because it's like wasted talent, you know, and it's aggravating to me. And I feel the same way with Baltimore. And it's, hey, listen, wait, the team you said is the most disappointing could use a bat or two, and the team I think is the most disappointing could use a pitcher. I mean, they should maybe get on the phone and talk to each other, because, you know, I think that could make things a little different on either side. Now, I don't know what Baltimore would really offer up for them. I think it would be more some minor league talent, but maybe to pair some guys that are getting ready to come up. I don't know what Castillo, I don't know what they're looking for.
How do you not look for a bat?
Right, like, is this like the Yankees with Stroman, that they're not going to make a move until they move off of Castillo? Like, I don't get it. Like,
they don't have to worry about going over the luxury tax. No, they are way not. Under. So
I'm pretty sure Juan Soto makes more than the whole team.
Right. I mean, so they're not even looking to make moves. It's just crazy to me. And
They're in striking distance.
Always. The last two seasons, they've been right there, like literally down to a week where they had a chance to be a wild card team, and they unfortunately missed out. But again, it was because they didn't have a couple of bats that could have got them over the top. And again, they didn't address it. So Looks like they're going to be doing the same thing this year, unless they make a crazy move in the All-Star break, you know, the trading deadline around that time. But I don't see them.
I don't see them doing that, really. That's a ways away, and, you know, there's a lot of baseball that's got to happen. You know, listen, guys are going to get hurt. A lot of things are going to change. So, you know, we got to see how that works out. You know, but I totally agree with your take with Seattle. They are definitely disappointing. But to me, it's just Baltimore because they're there already. They just need that extra step to make them that, you know, potential number one contender coming out of the American League.
And to me, they didn't do it. I think they left it wide open for the Yankees to really take that division.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know.
Because Boston hasn't added a bat either. So.
No, and Boston could use some help. You know, listen, they got some young talent there. Obviously, they added Crochet. You know, they've added a couple of pieces. So, I mean, let's see where this goes, you know, with that. It's just Baltimore to me is just so, it's just, dude, you're right there, man.
I know.
Do something.
And again, Seattle too. Same thing, right there. Even with the Astros being that good, they still had a chance to get into the postseason, and they just didn't have enough.
And the Astros looked awful to start the season. That 100%. Was the best part.
Yep.
They looked terrible.
And Seattle came on strong at the end. They were winning games. They were pitching like they always do. They were scoring enough to win, but they didn't have enough firepower at the end.
Logan Gilbert had a losing record. I think that says what it speaks for their lineup and what they didn't do. And they have some pieces in that lineup. They got Rowley. They got Julio Rodriguez.
Right.
They got pieces. Protect these guys.
As the GM, you would say, you know what? We're lacking a bat. Nothing.
Radio sounds.
They did nothing to improve their offense for 2025.
Yeah, at least with Baltimore, I guess maybe you know, at least with Baltimore they've added some pieces. They're at least, I guess, trying. I mean, look, Gary Sanchez rakes in Baltimore, so maybe that is what he needs to go to the team's ballpark.
They added stopgaps. You know, they didn't add anybody.
Nothing that blows your mind. Yeah, right. Nothing that blows your mind. But to me,
fillers,
it's just,
as we say.
Yeah, you know, they needed a little extra, and Seattle does as well. I mean, I don't know. Maybe their pitching gets them over the hump where. Maybe their offense picks up. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's what they're banking on, and they got a couple pieces for cheap at the deadline, something to add to the lineup. I don't know. You know, listen, Baltimore, again, their lineup, they're going to hit, but are they going to pitch?
Right.
You know, they got a lot of question marks with their pitching rotation and their bullpen, so to speak. But, listen, Baltimore could be right there bullpen-wise. I think they have a ton of guys, a ton of high-leverage guys that can pitch well. But, you know, they had some health issues, so that, you know, that hurt them a little bit. I mean, Billy Bautista went down last year, you know. That was a big blow for them.
But I agree. I think the two teams that we picked, definitely disappointing in the offseason.
Just give some competition in the American League. Do something, you know. Yeah. And look, like you said, I think Texas bounces back. I don't know if they win the division. I just don't know.
I like their pitching the best. I know, like I said, Seattle has great starting pitching, but I like their pitching the best in terms of how it matches up with their offense. I think they...
More of a complete team. Yeah, I can see that.
And they had trouble hitting the fastball last year. And Bruce Bochy even alluded to that, saying they really had some trouble hitting the fastball for whatever reason. So you don't think that's going to happen 2 years in a row. No. They did literally just win the World Series in 2023. So
yeah, I mean, you got a two-time World Series MVP in that lineup. You got Marcus Semien in that lineup. You know,
right.
You got a couple
a lot of
boppers
good guys
in
there.
They added Berger. You know, they got some pop in that lineup.
Right.
You know, Adolis Garcia being another one. I mean, you know, he was so fun to watch their World Series run because he was just automatic. You know, if these guys even, you know, I think they're all going to bounce back and have some pretty good years. And then you have arguably the greatest pitcher we've seen in our generation, DeGrom coming back.
If he could give you 25 starts, Texas wins the division.
You got to take that.
That's how I feel.
So yeah, no, listen, they have an opportunity to be right there, and you know, listen, Seattle and Houston could have challenged them. At least Seattle,
and they didn't. That's why to me the most disappointing, because they really could have.
They're in striking distance.
A couple of pieces.
They're right there, you know,
and they're in striking distance. And you know what's so funny? They still are.
Yeah,
because they haven't made a move. They still are in striking distance. But you think it's February 11th? They would have kind of put that to bed already and kind of sorted that out, and they just haven't. But that's just how it works. These GMs, I guess,
owners,
you know,
owners,
just owners with the money.
Spending money.
GMs can't spend the money because it's not theirs, so they get put in a position where the cards that they're dealt with, is what they're going to have to put out on opening day.
You know, you got to be frustrated to be a Seattle fan right now. You know,
100%.
Baltimore too. I mean, you know, you're seeing all these moves happening around you. You're seeing these teams. I mean, how could you say that Houston loses Ryan Pressly and Kyle Tucker and
it's still better than you?
Right, and you know they retooled in a way where they didn't take themselves out of the race.
Right.
You know, they're still in the mix. They're in the mix. Arguably, maybe the favorite in the division. I know you like Texas. I sort of like Houston still. And, you know, listen, the jury's still not out on Bregman. If Bregman goes back to Houston, I mean, that lineup is so deep. You know, so.
I agree.
There's a lot of moving parts, though.
Me personally, I don't think he's going back to Houston, Bregman. But.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Yeah. I mean, listen, I think Arenado and him are maybe kind of when one goes, the other one's going to go right after. Maybe, potentially. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
Time is going to tell. But, guys, this is going to do it for us on this episode. You know, listen, we touched on a lot. And we love to hear from you, you know, on our Instagram and our email, diamonddiscussion25@gmail. Guys, hit us up. We want to answer some of your questions. We want to start, you know, incorporating you guys in our show and you know, taking some questions and maybe some thoughts. And, you know, we've had some comments here and there, and we love to see it. You know, we enjoy it probably as much as we do talking, you know. So we love reading your comments and you know, love your feedback. And just want to say we appreciate everybody listening.
Thanks, guys. And like Mike said, if you want to leave comments and emails, we would like to bring that to the air, too. If you have questions and topics that you want to talk about, we could discuss it on air. And it could just be a new element for you guys to have on the show to listen to. So thanks, guys. Have a great night.